League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Well, it's Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. I'm delighted to welcome on the line now Gary Morecambe, and you might have heard of his dad called Eric Morecambe. So let's say good afternoon to you, Gary. How are you?
Good afternoon, Dave. I'm very well, thanks.
Now, the reason we have you on, and we've spoken to you before on this show, is your book, 50 Years of Sunshine, and I can't believe 50 years for starters, but we'll talk about that in a moment. But the first question, Gary, is something I was chatting to you off air about there. Do you ever get fed up with being known as Eric's son when you've got your own life and your own career and your own interest?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a strange thing, really, because I'm in my 60s now, would you believe? And if I wake up in the morning and find I'm still breathing, that's the result. So I'm kind of, with that in mind, all the rest doesn't really matter somehow. So, but I'm sure, Dave, when I was younger, certainly in my teens and 20s, maybe even my 30s, there was this thing of, wow, Morecambe and Wise are brilliant, and I've always thought that, but maybe I should be just doing a few other things, which I did. But it always came back to Eric and Ernie, of course it did, yes.
And I was reading that it was when you first went to school that you kind of had this revelation, I suppose, of the fact that you weren't the only one that knew your dad.
Well, no, that's right. That was really when it all sort of took off for me, because I started at school at 5 at primary school, and suddenly people were coming up to me, and the teachers and the parents of the kids, as well as the kids themselves, saying, oh, we saw your dad's show and all the rest of it. And I always thought up until the age of 5, it was just us, the family, watching this box in a room, you know, and there he was. We thought that was his job, was to entertain us, probably. So I had a huge, seismic shift, really. And, you know, it's strange, but at the age of 5, when realizing that, I was absolutely clued in to what the whole game was about. No more now in my 60s than I was at the age of 5. I mean, I just knew what the situation meant and where it could go and how it would impact on life. And I kind of knew how to handle it, at a very young age, which is probably why it's always sat very comfortably with me.
I think my kids are, I've got a 3-year, just about turns 3, and a 6-year-old. And I think they think that they hear me on the radio, but it's nothing to do with anybody else. It's just purely for them. I did a whole show for them on the way home from school.
well, isn't that to think that? That can be disillusioned.
Now, I should imagine then, because, you know, I'm trying to put myself in your position. If I was, you know, bringing my mates back after school, or having a sleepover or something, or weekend, and, you know, I'm not sure if they're there or because Eric Morecambe's my dad.
Yes. Well, for them, it was great. It was a nightmare for me, because I knew that he would have to get involved. He was that sort of person. He always saw himself as a big kid, really. He just wanted to join in. He didn't want to miss out. And of course, I would apologize to these people of my own age, be it when we were like 8 or 9 or 10 to when we were 18, 19, 20. But they would say, oh, no, it's fine. I mean, later on in life, it was great for them, because the one or two I'm still in contact with in our 60s, and just quite recently, one of them said to me, he said, you've got to bear in mind, we were 18-year-olds going to the house of Eric Morecambe, being handed Havana cigars and double whiskey, and sat down with Eric Morecambe to watch on video a Morecambe and Wise show. Well, we didn't even have video recorders, these other people were saying. So I can see, actually, when I look back, I think it's all fantastic, but at the time, it did probably rankle with me a bit.
So, I mean, did you have that usual, you know, dad and son thing where you get embarrassed by your dad, you know, dancing around or whatever, playing around, you know, dad, don't do that?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of that. But on the other hand, that really was his character.
Yeah.
And again, going back to recognizing what he was at an early age, there was no point being too affected, because he just had to go, oh, here we go again, sort of thing. You were getting this kind of Eric Morecambe in diluted form at home, really. So you just went with it, because that was his genius, and he was so good at it and so good with people through it that you couldn't knock it. But it's back to the old thing of, yes, I'm sure as a teenager or whatever, I was a little bit disgruntled and embarrassed. But if you hadn't been like that, we'd have all thought he was ill.
I was going to ask you the question, what is the difference between the Eric Morecambe I would know, who I've loved, yeah, and Ernie for years and years and years, and I'm 42, but I grew up on them. What's the difference between the Eric Morecambe I know and the Eric Morecambe you know? But then I suppose that's a difficult question because you got nothing to compare your relationship to.
Well, there is that. I mean, he would have said not a lot.
Yeah.
But I think that there were very big differences, yes, because you couldn't operate in that heightened fashion that you saw on TV.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, he would never fully dispel that character because so much of what you saw on TV was his real character. He was that funny, which was, again, a very unique thing to be that continuously funny. But he knew how to chill down a little bit. He wasn't great at sort of completely relaxing because his mind was half turned to Morecambe and Wise and his career constantly. He was a workaholic, which probably didn't help. It just sort of, it all just, he always put it that it all just happened. He just went along with the whole journey. And what happened, happened. And I thought that's a very good attitude to have with the whole thing, really. Whatever happened, just happened. And he did once say to me, which I thought was very profound, he said, we were going to some event, and I think we were going along with Elton John and Ronnie Barker and a few others. And he just said, you've got to enjoy this, you know, because you'll look back one day when it's not happening again and just say, wow, those were good days. And I thought that was very far-seeing of him because the whole journey was like that.
Yeah, so profound. When I interview people about comedians and so on, a lot of comedians, like Peter Sellers, have this kind of depression side to their life.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say that about Eric, but I've not heard you say that. So is there any truth in that?
True.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, I don't think I saw him have a bad day.
That's annoying, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, he woke up in the morning when we would be thinking about breakfast, and he'd be thinking about what's the next funny thing he can observe and how he can use it in a professional sense. That's where his mind was. It certainly, he wasn't depressed at all about anything ever. It's quite remarkable. He could get grumpy about things like we all do, but he was never depressed. I've read that somewhere.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's strange. Maybe people assume that because of the likes of, you know, Tony Hancock or whatever, and they see, it must have been the same for Eric, but it really wasn't. He didn't have a dark side to him like that at all.
And did you ever feel like, I mean, because some funny people, and I'm a bit like this myself and my family maybe, I can use sometimes my sense of humour, getting really deep here, Gary, by the way, as a defence mechanism. Did you ever feel like this is definitely a true Eric, or there's actually, I don't really know the real Eric behind it all, or it's a bit of an act, you know, with all due respect, is that something that you felt was there?
No, I'll tell you one thing, though. I think that I think he was naturally just really funny.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an act at all. It's just the way he was. But I think in the last years, what proved to be the last years of his life, and he died very young at 58, I think then it was becoming a strain. Because I think then there was something about him that was shifting with him. I think that he wanted to write more, be at home more. He once said to me that he didn't want to have to watch things that kept making him laugh, which was basically saying he wasn't that fond anymore of comedy. So I think that would have went when it became a little bit more forced and a bit more of an effort, but not during the main years, no.
You think of all the years of comedy that he did, and that's kind of understandable, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it'd be like anyone, if they did accountancy all their life or whatever, you must reach a point you think, well, you know what, I thought something different in life. And he was like that. He didn't want to watch funny films.
Yeah.
You know, his films, you know, I don't know, films from Hollywood days, like the early Cary Grant films and things like that. That's what he really enjoyed, and Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. He wasn't looking to think, oh, I must watch the next great comedy film or something. So the comedy was definitely going off the agenda for him later on in life.
It's funny because a lot of us now, especially in our family, we're, when it comes to comedy, there's some good stuff around, I suppose, but we go back to watching your dad, we go back to watching Dad's Army, Only Fools and Horses and Fawlty Towers, and you know, and we kind of go back to that, because I think, for me, that's where I can't And I don't know, comedy just seems to have moved on. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a warmth about it. And now, I don't know, there just seem to be guys in suits who look like they're making a lot of money, which is a very cynical way of putting it. But that's how I feel. However funny they are, that's how I feel. And so I don't really follow either myself too closely.
Now, I was reading in the book that they went from, I might get this wrong way around, from ITV to BBC in the 60s, and that's way around.
They went from, they started at the BBC, which was disastrous. Yeah. That was a one-off series in 54. But then they ended up at ATV, which was great business. And then they moved to the BBC, where they had their wonderful decade from 67 to 77.
And then back to the ITV.
And then back to ITV as kind of living legends, really, for their final sort of hurrah, really. But a lot of illness problems for my dad by then, so things were changing.
A lot of the, you mentioned the book, a lot of the well-known, you know, the ones that we'll go back to and say, you know, Eric and Ernie doing the breakfast stuff and, you know, and some of the great routines that they come up with was the BBC era. So that's...
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and you were saying that actually... Because I think for me, as a 42-year-old, you know, we tend to go back to that era, and that's Eric and Ernie, but forget about the decades that went before. And they almost reinvented themselves, didn't they?
Well, they did, but the decades that went before were really proving to be the training ground of what came later.
Yeah.
I think that's why the BBC years were so good. It's because they spent 20 years trying to make it.
Yeah.
So they'd had an awful lot of experience. And then, you know, good fortune steps in as well. It wasn't good fortune that Eric had his heart attack, but it was good fortune that brought about Eddie Braben arriving on the scene as their writer. And suddenly this great partnership developed with Eric and Ernie and Eddie Braben. It was all a very, very good time, and that's when things really kicked on. It got really creative in their comedy as well.
And you talk about the Andre Previn scene, and you give a bit of a context for that, which I found fascinating, because, you know, many of us have watched that scene time and time again, but not really known the backstory to it.
Yes, yeah. Well, Andre Previn hadn't rehearsed, really, because I think his mother was ill in Canada, so he was flying backwards and forwards a lot. So he hadn't had time to learn the script. And Eric and Ernie, particularly my father, were getting to the point where they felt that they might just junk it or junk him and just have Ernie play the part and just do it in a different way, which is how they originally did it, originally on record, in fact. So they were a little bit miffed, to put it nicely. And then, of course, Andre Previn, like a lot of people who have enormous creative skill at what they do, tend to be able to spread into other areas and genres with that creative skill. And he, of course, as he himself said, he learnt most of it in the taxi going from Heathrow Airport to his hotel with a torch in the back of the cab. So they get to the show and he just walks in and does it, and he's absolutely phenomenal. So what could you say? I mean, the man is a genius, and that routine is genius as well. I mean,
yeah.
Brilliant.
And I mean, going back about 3 or 4 years ago, I interviewed Angela Rippon, and I mentioned that scene, and she said really that was the famous scene where she reveals her legs for the first time as a newsreader.
Yes.
And she said that had such an effect upon her career that she can't overstate it. And I suppose so many names that came through the show, and I suppose you get to meet all these guys, did you, as Eric's son?
Yeah. Well, Angela Rippon I saw quite recently, actually. We were talking about the same thing, and she was saying that a week doesn't go by. Now, all these years on, a decade, 40
it's crazy,
years on.
Crazy, isn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah, a week doesn't go by when people say something like, remember the show, it was great, that routine, or show us your legs, Angela. She gets that, you know, all the time. But Andre Previn, going back to Previn, he says that he can't come to London. You know, if he goes to get a cab, the driver says, hello, Mr. Preview. He's getting all the sketch abuse.
Yeah.
And it is wonderful, because 4 decades on, you won't get much comedy that's remembered in that way.
It's
a bit special.
Yeah. And it really was. I mean, it was a national institution, wasn't it? I mean, and I think for me, the chemistry between Eric and Ernie, you just cannot manufacture that. That's decades of working together and friendship, isn't it?
Yes, it's that thing, I suppose the nearest nowadays would be Ant and Jake. That thing where you grow up as kids and then end up in something not together, but something that you shared event, like a TV series in their case. For Eric and Ernie, it was Youth Takes a Bow touring.
Yeah.
And from that, you then join up and work together, just like Ant and Dec have done. And then you know, the rest is history. So yeah, it does take all those years and years to make it natural, so that you know that they know each other really, really well. Because if they don't, that's when you get your typical sort of semi-musical double act. It just, then it's about two men just being put together to try to be funny.
Yeah.
You know, with Eric and Ernie, you just know that they have this huge history, and that's what makes it so special.
Yeah. It's annoying because a lot of us have to work hard at it, and he'll just walk in the room, and he did work hard at it, that's the thing, but he made it look effortless. I mean, sometimes recently we've been sat watching Would I Lie to You, the panel show on the telly, and this is the influence, I think, of Eric. We sat there and I said to my wife, look, Lee Mack, how much you betting if I read upon Lee Mack that he's an Eric Morecambe fan? Because every now and then he will do something, a little mannerism, and it's like watching Eric. And
Totally. I've been to Lee's house and a couple of times, and yeah, he's got quite an area that's a shrine to Morecambe and Wise.
Wow.
Yeah, he is totally, yes, he built his life around Morecambe and Wise, his working career around, definitely, yeah, and he admits that. But I think he does it very well.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, he's a natural talent, isn't he? But he's... But every now and then, just the mannerism or the... and I've been asked by our producer here, not the producer, our technical guy, said, you've got to ask Gary whether he can do the paper in the bag trick. Did his dad teach him how to do that?
Oh, yes, we all had to do the paper bag trick. Yes. And I still do it for my kids today, but they're not interested.
Brilliant.
Well, at least they're not interested in me doing it.
He said, get him to do that, so he doesn't make very good radio, so...
we'll have to save that one, don't
we? Yeah, brilliant. I mean, you talk also about the fact that your dad had heart issues, and that goes back to his early career, I think you mentioned there, and it's obviously something that was with him all his life.
Yeah, that would have been back to 1968. I mean, he was a bit of a pressure boiler. It had to burst at some point because, as we said earlier, they were doing two decades of work of trying to make it. So at some point of trying to be funny constantly and being on, something had to break. And in their case, the wheels came off and it was Eric with his heart. But that also related to the fact that he'd been down the mines during the war as a Bevan boy. So he'd had bad health when he came out of the mine.
Yeah.
So that set him up badly. And then, of course, lifestyle. Back in those days, everyone smoked and drank and didn't really do exercise, and that was him. So I think everything was stacked against him on that front, really, on the health side. Yeah.
It must have been such a shock at the time, but does it feel like he's never really gone?
Oh, God, yeah, totally. It is a business. I mean, I have to sort of put that bluntly, otherwise I'd be lying. I mean, I'm involved with my sister and my mother, who's still ticking on, but mostly my
bless
sister
her, Joan.
And I.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mother Joan, who's 91 now. But yeah, quite an age. But my sister and I particularly, we run it as a bit of a business. We have a very good age still. And we just, and that's how it goes, because there's so much demand for it all.
Mm.
So we keep an eye on it all.
So in many ways, he's always still very much part of your life.
We're totally on that basis alone, that every day. I mean, my wife says to me, she says, when we got married, I had no idea it'd be 24-7 with Morecambe and Wise. And I said, well, nor did I. But the last 5 or 10 years, it's gone a bit manic.
I'm hoping she's a Morecambe and Wise fan, is she?
Oh, she is. That's a funny thing. Her and her father are huge Morecambe and Wise fans. And little did she realise she'd end up in the family.
For a moment, I thought you were going to say, no, she likes little and large. But anyway, that could have been
No,
she
can't do that. All kind of them.
Brilliant. It's a fascinating book, and I can't believe it's 50 years, and it's 50 years of sunshine, of course. For many a time, we've closed our show. I did it for 2 years nearly non-stop with positive thinking, which is kind of my... I prefer over the other one, but of course, 50 Years of Sunshine is that's a fun. That song is still living on as much today as it ever was.
Oh,
as well.
Bring Me Sunshine. Yeah. Bring Me Sunshine just crops up constantly in adverts and everything. Yeah. Quite amazing.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, thank you for coming on. And I did want to ask you as well, and I do apologise. I started off here, then I kind of got too carried away by all your dad stuff. What else do you do? Because, I mean, I've seen that you're a film director and you're involved with different things in the industry.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit more about you, Gary.
Oh, right. Well, mostly I do Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah.
because, as we've discussed already, that's there to do and it's important. And the rest of the time, if there is any time, I've been making a whole raft of short films, yeah, which mainly for film festival. I like working with people who want to get in the industry, young people, young actors, actresses, sound people, you know, all kinds of people, directors. And, yeah, I've been able, through my small film company, Yalai Films, to get people together to do things. And hopefully, every now and then, it's a really nice feeling, because maybe Lovely. One in 30 or 40 actually take off and do something. So that's really what I've been doing. But I've got to say, you know, I don't do that all the time. I'm in my 60s. I want to retire. can you arrange that, please?
I'll see what I can do. Just going back, final word for Eric. Is there anybody in the family that, because you sound like you've got a great sense of humour, is there anybody that's got that sense of humour of Eric's, you know, that quick wit?
Yes, my third son, Arthur.
Yeah,
totally. He's absolutely. He is the family comedian. Absolutely hilarious and natural, but has no interest in showbiz whatsoever.
There we are.
There you go. He'll entertain a lot of people in pubs and restaurants.
Well, Gary, thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. The book's called Morecambe and Wise, 50 Years of Sunshine by Gary Morecambe, son of Eric Morecambe, and with his own life as well, of course. And thank you for coming on, Gary.
I should just point out, Dave, that the book has been published in 2013 in a different format, and that this is a composite compact version. I wouldn't want people thinking they're buying an absolutely brand new book.
No, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, they're brilliant. So it's a new 2018 edition. So that's fantastic. Yeah. It's available if you go onto our website as well, talkradioeurope.net. You can click on the bookshop banner and you can order the book that way as well. Well, you know, it's just a few months away, but we'll all be watching the Christmas specials again. So thank you for coming on, Gary. Really appreciate your time.
Lovely. Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Cheers, Gary. Bye-bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.